Boris is feeling great. He's not fading at all. So do we get to call this the Tedesco Park? Do we get to call it the Tedesco Corridor? I can't do Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor every time I talk about it.
You know what? I think it's going to be probably the Tedesco Park.
That's kind of what I mean.
That's good. Is that how you're referring to it at the Conservation Board?
No, I'm referring to it. However, there are other references out there as well.
Sure.
I'm sure.
Let's see. Yes. I will try to be very brief. You know, I think everyone here is familiar with this project and how we got where we are today. But just to synopsize that, we have been through a master plan development process now. We contracted with engineering firms to help us through that. Set up a review team that has representation from 9 different agencies, organizations, all in the goal of developing the best facility that we can and being as collaborative as we can in bringing this forward. So that design process, if you will, for the master plan development process is coming to fruition. We now have a plan that we're ready to bring forward and ask for your consideration and your approval on. The last step in that process was public open houses that we had on the 31st of January. We had those at the Research Park Core facility. We had 2 different sessions. We had approximately 180 people there combined on those 2 sessions. Tremendous, tremendous turnout for that. We advertised that, of course, with the businesses there at the park. We advertised it through the paper. We advertised it through mailings to neighbors. So that's how we put that forward. And we're very pleased with the turnout. The plan that you see, we feel, does achieve the objectives that we set out for the project. And that is 1, an overall environmental uplift. 2, a quality of life uplift. And then economic impact development improvements. Enhancements, if you will. And then we really feel that this plan has long-term dynamic demonstration, so changing demonstrations of techniques that illustrate how, again, commercial development can be symbiotic with resource enhancement and all of those 3 goals that I mentioned. I think this is a pretty robust plan, yet also a pretty basic plan that accomplishes those goals. I'm just going to real quickly go through some of this. I'm going to take you through some of the components of the plan. This is the east side of the park. This is Riverside Road right here. The airport is over here. Just to kind of walk you through some of this, the bold yellow lines are paved trails. The narrower lines are secondary trails and probably aren't paved, but they're maybe a mulch surface or something like that, maybe grass surface. So this is a trail that illustrates potential, or illustrates future trail that would connect up to the trail that goes under Highway 30 and past Bettenhead to Grand Avenue, etc.
I think that's called a Hunter Bridge Trail.
No, that's on the other end, and I'll show you. But no, this one goes up past Bettenhead under Highway 30. this would probably one of the major connections from trail users in town to get out of town through this trail right here. One of the major connectors. Some other elements here, of course, you'll see the stream work, and I won't get into any great detail on the stream work, but we have each one of these stars represents a practice that's going to be installed in the stream, whether it be a kind of a traditional hard armoring practice or whether it be a bioengineering practice, all of those would be explored to essentially stabilize that stream. And in some of these, we'll look at reconnection of the stream to the floodplain. That means is that right now the stream is disconnected from the floodplain at most rain events. So up to, I'll use an example of a 100-year event. You might have connection, i.e. the water might leave the banks and get to the floodplain in, let's say, a 100-year event, but in a 50-year event, it never would because the channel is so incised and it has so much water-holding capacity that never was there prior to that incision. And so normally a healthy channel would have left its banks and gone to the floodplain at, let's just say for demonstration sake, a 20-year event, whereas now that's not happening until a much larger rain event.
Which means you get more downforce and the problem just begins.
It exacerbates itself and it leads to more downwater flow, more flow into the rivers, more flow into the Skunk River, wherever it may be. It's evacuating that water much quicker. And with that, has more erosive capacity. So that's what we have here, a very disconnected system. So we'll demonstrate at a number of different points throughout the channel how to manage for that and either raise the elevation of the stream or lower the elevation of the immediately surrounding floodplain in order to get some of that reconnection.
Yeah, we actually want a stream that gets out of its banks fairly regularly rather than never.
Correct. And to utilize those benefits of the floodplain in flood mitigation, if you will, and allow that water to dissipate through wetlands, etc., rather than evacuating it off the landscape right away and ending up with larger flows and rivers.
Okay, look at Steve Printer back there, who's the research printer. And that's been thoroughly vetted with the research park and the tenants there, that they do understand one day when they come to work, they may see that the stream's out of its banks. It's not going to impact their ability to go to work. It's just that they won't be able to maybe ride the bike that day on the trail or something, right?
Yeah, we're looking at actually very little impact. Very little impact to the trails. And yes, there might be a time when something isn't accessible, but it's not going to be very often at all with the way this is designed.
Okay.
But that is a good point. That's the east end access. And then moving on, here's the middle area of the park. Now, this is where most of our programming is going to take place, or most of our design touch is going to take place here. This shows two of the three existing wetlands. There's stormwater retention basins that needed to go in for stormwater ordinances, and the research park was so willing to move those forward and design those more as, quote, wetlands than natural bodies of water than a traditional kind of rectangular stormwater retention basin. So we're very appreciative of that. Those are in place now. The plan calls for then a trail system, as you can see here, around those with some, say, some program areas, like areas for groups to gather, areas for classes to meet, etc. One is right here, referred to as the nest. Another one is right here, referred to as the copse. And then we have a wetland boardwalk right here that I guess I didn't mention on that other slide. A series of those continue kind of secondary trails here. This is a stream crossing. We refer to this as a ford. It's a series of stepping stones across the stream. Move quickly on. This is kind of a rendition of what we refer to as the nest area. So this is the lower wetland, and this illustrates the seeding area here, a little programming area here, a boardwalk type area right here with a trail around the wetland. This then moving to the west side of the park, University Avenue is right here. Flores, you asked about the Hunzinger Trail. This right here doesn't show it on this image, but right here is that middle roundabout.
Okay.
And this trail right here is the one that will come up, cross that roundabout, and then go into the Hunzinger Development Complex. And then go south from there along the
Well, it was around the pond in there, right? Or
around the ponds.
In there, and then along.
No. So we're kind of a separate note, but we're very appreciative of Hunzinger's. And when we were talking about that trail, potentially using that old rail alignment, which we'd like to do, there were some neighbors there that had their house on the west side of the university, very close to that old alignment. Very excited about inviting a lot of people to their backyard because I think they could have served breakfast off of their deck to trail users. And so Hunzinger has worked with us and we're sympathetic to that as well, neighbor relations. And so they allowed that trail to go essentially through their property on the west side of their stormwater basins and then go on to the south from there. So very appreciative for that. But this shows, again, a future parking area here that's not being considered in the cost opinion right now, but identified as something that we might want to consider in the future. The trail system, a bridge over the stream right here. This is the edge of the parking for the core facility, which is located right here. And then this is the upper wetland cell, or that first wetland cell.
Okay. Up here we show future parking, and then I see the left future kiosk and restroom. All right. So when I got back the most recent draft of the capital improvements plan, and I wasn't there the day the board approved it, but I noted that in the last three years of it. It seemed like there was something to do with the park also out there. Are those the projects that are on that all of a sudden have been added to like 20 and 21? Okay.
No.
No. No plans. I mean, this is something that ultimately we'd like to have done, but there's really no funding to do any of this right now.
Anything that's identified as future in here is not contemplated in the funding that we're talking about to approve this plan.
In the $4.7 million estimate, is that right?
Correct. That's not there.
Okay, thank you.
So, yes, this does identify. It's going to take us some time to determine, do we need that? Do we need that facility? So we'll get the park operating and developed and then ask ourselves that question. What do we need for parking and do we need to have a lot there that's identified as a potential here in the plan?
And the restrooms.
Correct. So those are the main design elements. Again, here it is in its entirety. This doesn't show, but again, that trail will cross this middle roundabout and come down Cottonwood and then down this way to connect onto that old alignment. Any questions on the design elements? No? So then I guess I'll go through, you know, I mentioned we had a pretty good turnout with public at that open house. We did receive some comments from the public at that and have been taking comments through this process. So the majority of the comments that we received at that event were they fall into two groups. One is trail use. We received multiple comments about both the trail surfacing, requesting a softer surface, and two...
So asphalt instead of concrete.
Asphalt instead of concrete. And two is to design it to minimize the speed of trail users, i.e. minimize the speed of bicycles using the trail. And so both of those are being taken under consideration. The speed issue, I think you're probably to an extent, we're always going to have that as a concern. We have to address it through management, i.e. signage, and i.e. enforcement, etc. The surfacing, I've asked our consultants to evaluate all options for surfacing. That will include asphalt, concrete, and even permeable materials. As we move forward through our design process, we'll take a look at those options.
While you ask the consultants to weigh in with the actual numbers, all right, can you tell me if there's any indication that asphalt is more expensive than concrete? Impervious is obviously more expensive.
Yeah, you know, as far as asphalt and concrete, it has a lot to do with just the oil prices. Higher the oil prices, more expensive asphalt is, etc.
So the danger is maintenance on asphalt is
right.
Much greater than
right.
So our experience with asphalt is it's not as, you know, it doesn't last as long. It's not as hardy as concrete. You spend more money in repair. But, you know, we're looking at the numbers and taking that into consideration, certainly.
And then the design of minimize speed, were there any thoughts about a few speed bumps at key locations that would still affect this?
Yeah, we'll take a look at that. And again, they're looking at trail layout, too, to minimize some of the speed as well. Maybe, you know, more curves here or there.
And curves equal cost, right?
What's that?
Do curves normally equal cost? Increase in cost?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
So, the other line of questioning really was at one of those sessions was in regard to the water quality components here, the flood or the watershed connection, floodplain connection, etc. And so, yeah, we're being very cognizant of that. I think there was also some feedback that really if the plan doesn't demonstrate as much as some people would have liked. How we are putting the teachable moments in here and the demonstration in here, and you know it's here, but a lot of that's going to come through design. We're just not to that level yet. For example, every one of those little white asterisks.
Right.
Those are teaching places. Those are where different techniques will be illustrated, will be put into place where we can talk about. You'll see we've got four different places where people can get down to the water. One is right here, and all of those are at teachable places. So that's really what we're trying to do. And we really haven't vetted out our interpretive plan as well.
Right.
That's coming, but it doesn't really belong in that level of planning isn't appropriate for a master plan. So I want to be very clear that we are moving forward with the utmost in attention that we're giving to demonstration and interpretation and teaching, but the master plan really doesn't address the details.
It's conceptual, but the concept is that we have spots where a group can, in fact, enter the stream and move down the stream through these teachable moments and then have a spot where they can come back out of the stream. And at least in concept, that's where we're
correct. And I also want to emphasize that the teachable opportunities here are not just going to be for specific demographics. They're not going to be designed specifically for school children.
Right.
Their audience, if you will include school children up through professional level folks like engineers, etc., that want to come out and see what we're doing here and learn from that. So it's going to run the gamut. It's going to run from schools to all through all age groups and in different disciplines, if you will, as far as professionally, audiences at Research Park, etc. So we're going to have a very robust interpretation.
Yeah, so I hope there's a way for us to reach out to developers. I hope there's a way for us to reach out to our farmers. I hope there's the number of groups that we want to impact with these different possibilities for the way you deal, kind of non-traditional ways of dealing with this stuff.
One of the things that this, I would just kind of try to be brief.
It's too late to be brief, but we're not done yet. So.
To get back to the very core of this project, one of the very cores of this project is, again, to demonstrate that sustainability and use something that we have here that doesn't exist anywhere else in the state, and that is the collaboration of all the partners, the skills, and the ability that we have right here in the county to bring something like this to bear for the benefit of the whole state. And one of the unique aspects here that we're embracing is something that every community in Iowa has, and that is an interface between urban and rural, and how that interface can be managed appropriately for both of those areas, if you will. The watershed on this is both an urban and rural watershed. And as communities develop, we develop into rural areas, and how do we manage those resources appropriately for both of those functions? That's going to happen here. We've got about 1,000 acres of watershed here that we're working very closely with the university on, because much of that land is university land and in ag production. So, again, we want to demonstrate how that interface can happen strategically and with an eye toward, again, that ecological component as well as urban needs for development. So I'm going to then, I guess, briefly go into the cost opinion here. This plan has a cost opinion associated with it that is, I just received some updated numbers yesterday. I think they're $23,000 more than what was represented in your packet. So it's 4.755.
4.755, just over 600,000 of that is in contingency. We have talked really, really regularly, Mike, between the Board of Supervisors and the Conservation Board, that there's not $4.7 million in identified funding at this point. In fact, it's about $4.15 million in identified funding sources right now. So something's got to give. Either there's got to be more resources brought in, and it can't be from the county. The county's all in at $4 million, or we need to reduce costs. And so as we continue to refine the numbers, I just want to assure everybody there's real awareness there. Second thing I want to do, and all apologies to County Attorney Jessica Reynolds, who has spent her whole day here with us so far. So, Steve, I'd ask you to come up, because this is an opportunity for us, and I think an appropriate opportunity for us to make sure that two board members who have not really been sitting up here through this process have a chance. So if you've got the three people right now that have been involved in this conversation, Mike is a half step behind me and Steve on the start of this conversation, but the amount of time that Mike's behind this conversation is how long it took me to pick up the phone and call him after Steve Carter and I had the first conversation in 2013. And so if it's okay with you guys, I just want to start there and go through this with the three of us sitting here on the record exactly how we got to this point, because I think it's helpful for everybody to at least understand what happened. And so I'll start, Steve, and then you jump in the second I say something that doesn't quite line up with what you remember. So Steve Carter called me at some point in 2013 and said, hey, we're working on this research park expansion. At that time, as I recall, you were thinking it was going to be about a $50 million kind of project somewhere in there, and you really felt like it was important for the county to be part of this. It was necessary, and it was important for the county to take a small part of that. And I asked Steve, as I recall, well, what do you have in mind? What are you thinking of? This is not something that the county has typically taken part of. It's within a city. I can't quite visualize how we would do it. And I think Steve said something like, well, maybe the county could participate in some of the infrastructure issues or some of the things we got going on. Yeah, go ahead.
Why did you come up with that, Steve? You have to participate.
No, not have to.
Very simply. So what we embarked on the creation of our master plan in 2012. And so when Rick says $50 million, that's equivalent to the 4.7 year that Mike's talking about. So we created this plan, $50 million. The research park is actually a very small not-for-profit corporation. Going back to where the research park originally began, there wouldn't have been a research park had there not been Iowa State University through the foundation owned the property. The city of Ames and DOT were prepared to extend roadway and utilities, and the Story County helped to fund those roads. And I think there was some additional funding, but I'm not exactly sure what it was for. But the county put cash into the creation of infrastructure for the original 200 acres of the park. So my viewpoint, as I'm looking at a $50 million-plus extension of the research park, is that this is going to take a partnership again. And I have said from day one, if this region believes that the research park is a valuable asset, which I very strongly believe, of course, then this region needs to help support in these partnerships. And that is what led me to the discussion with Rick.
Thank you. So as I recall, Steve reached out to me and said, hey, is there a way that we can get the county involved in this? And I don't think it was in that original phone call, but soon after I went over to meet with Steve just to kind of look at some of the conceptual stuff. And at some point I asked, well, how much – Steve, how much are you really asking for? What kind of level of participation are you thinking of? And the number that sticks in my mind, Steve, and I don't know if it's the same as yours, is $2.5 million is the number that I remember you saying, you know, of a $50 million project, if you could take out 5% of it in this 2.5. And I said, I don't know how we do that. I don't believe that it's appropriate for the county to pay for infrastructure for the city of Ames. I don't know how we do that. And at some point there was some drawing somewhere that I saw and I said, tell me about this area in the middle, which didn't look quite like it looks now, but I think it had some more property on the west side and it didn't have as much property. And he said, but I said, tell me about what's happening here. And Steve said something along the line of, it's going to be common area, and, you know, we've got to deal with runoff, and we want some kind of natural stuff there. And at that point, for me, the wheels started turning of, maybe this is something that we can really think outside the box and approach conservation. And I don't, did I say something to you about it at that point, do you recall?
Yeah, I think our master plan anticipated a park. Now, you know, what's a park for me? What you're looking at now, I would never in my life would have envisioned, but some walking trails and biking trails, because you've come to appreciate that a lot of the folks at the research park, being able to get out and walk, run, bike was important. So,
but I think the original idea was more of an internal park, right? It was going to be to the research park. It was going to have some connector trails within the research park. But I don't think at that point we were really viewing this as a public kind of area.
No.
And so it struck with me, we had just started working on Dakin's Lake at that point, and it struck with me that this might be a great opportunity for the county to participate and create something special. But I didn't know what it would look like. I mean, this is so far removed from anything we've done. So I picked up the phone, as I recall, Mike, and called you and said, hey, you and I had just been working on Dakin's Lake, and he was there, and let's talk this through. Is there a way to do this? And I feel like, maybe you're talking about, I feel like there was great skepticism on your part when we first started talking about this. Fair?
Fair.
Okay. So Mike gathers his primary drivers from the board, and then I believe that included at that point Jim Pease and Ted Tedesco. And as I recall, the five of us sat down and talked, not even 30,000 feet, 100,000 feet, just kind of ideas and what would have to happen. And then I got out of it. And Steve, I think for the primary part, you and I came back in when it felt like things were falling apart at some point. We weren't getting where we needed to go, and Steve and I came back in at some point and kind of tried to help move the thing along. But as I recall, there was one point where it didn't feel like we were going to be able to go forward, right?
Correct. I mean, not long after, Rick, we had that conversation, and we started vetting this a little bit more with the conservation board and what are the possibilities. A couple of concerns came to mind. And at the same time, we started developing this idea a little bit more, fleshing this out into what you see here is more of this current vision that we had leading in through this process, through all of the opportunities that we have. What better opportunities than to try to accomplish what we're doing here, what you see in front of you. So, there was some concern. There was concern about, should the county really be the ones as part of this project that will eventually be inside the city? That was a concern.
I'd like to remind you, I also had a concern way back in 2014, and it's in your minutes.
Yep.
I had a great concern about how this was going to be paid for. And thank you, Rick, for admitting that there's Dakin's Lake and there's TIF money, and all of a sudden it's within your audience. Well, we do have money to go forward possibly with this. So,
now you put words in my mouth. Well, that's not what I said. I said, thinking about natural areas, I saw a possibility to have a conversation about how the county could participate and it benefit the county.
And then the other thing I just want to point out, that I was very concerned about how the planning was done in this. And so, in moving forward, because I have committed to support it, but just a reminder that I don't think there was a lot of public involvement in this process. Maybe that wasn't known out there among all of us, but it sounded like a lot of the planning went on.
Well, wait a minute. How do you? So that's where you and I, you and I seem to be tracking together on a lot of areas, and then you go down that pathway, and I don't know how a conceptual plan. I mean, this is not a final plan. How a conceptual plan like this gets done if the first thing we had done would be have a public open house without even a concept. So did we go through the process? And I say we. I wasn't part of it. I think I was part of one meeting in developing this initial conceptual plan. But it seems to me like the completely appropriate way to involve the public is to put together a conceptual plan and then pull the public together, which Mike is just talking about, that we've just done that. There's not a final plan done. The public is getting lots and lots of input before a final plan is done. And so what I don't know is how, where the rubber meets the road in terms of actually being able to get things done, and who is appropriate to include when you start talking about the big conceptual plans, not the finite specific plans, but the big conceptual plans. And I think we handled, we, and I think more about Mike than anybody, but Mike and Steve, some of your staff, have handled this exactly like it needs to be handled to get it to the point that it's ready for the public to rely on.
I think the public feels, there's members of the public who feel like this is unreal. Having had so many interviews involved, there were a lot of meetings that were held with a small group at a table that weren't done for a lot of members of the public.
I would disagree with that in so far as I personally never really couldn't quite have envisioned a park like this, what the conservation, and one of the reasons I came today was I wanted to express our appreciation for the job Mike and his crew have done with the Conservation Board in creating what I believe is really a unique asset. And adds to what we're trying to do with the research park exponentially, far more than I would have ever dreamt of. So, but I have, through this process, as Rick said, I have attended multiple Board of Supervisor meetings, multiple conservation, not just meetings, but they were hearings or public activities where this project was talked about, there was information made available, there were members of the public. So I thought it was a pretty open process throughout, and have appreciated even this planning process. We were given an opportunity to have some of our tenants participate in the planning process. And so I think, from my perspective, there's really been a lot of effort to do that.
Okay. Absolutely, yeah. No, well, I appreciate the question because, well, if you don't ask it now or we don't get it clarified now, who else are we going to get it clarified?
Exactly.
And I just want to make sure that not, and I mean this as nicely and softly as I can, but not in campaign-related activities that we're going to really talk about how we got it, how this all happened, and why all of a sudden we're looking at a project that could be somewhere around $4.7 million. Why? Because the reality is, and I want to start with the 2.5. Is that the number you remember, Steve?
Yeah, I was sitting here trying to think where we came up with that, but yeah.
That's where I remember us starting.
That is.
And the reality is, if you took this plan, and it's not up on the screen, but the plan that's back there by Austin, if you took it and you just worried about it, dealing with the runoff, creating some kind of trail space and native areas, you could easily do this project for $2.5 million. But when you start to add the educational components, when you start to add the tie-in for trails throughout Story County, when you start to add some of the... So it's much cheaper to go in and do one conservation practice multiple times rather than going in and doing 15 different kind of conservation practices along the stream. There were many, many places that we could have saved some money if this were not going to be a true educational, or intended to be a true educational opportunity, really one-of-a-kind kind of park, and really an amenity for not only Research Park, but for all the people of Story County and Central Iowa. And so I think it's completely fair to say, well, wait a minute, why are we spending an extra $2 million, and what are we getting for it? And what I would say is, we're enhancing water quality rather than just water movement. We're going back to some native areas that you wouldn't do if you were looking for just a natural area, but you weren't really trying to reattach the stream to the floodplain and some of the native things. You could spend a lot less money. And if it were not truly meant to draw people from outside the research park to the research park, I need to spend a lot less. And so then the question becomes, okay, what are you getting for that extra money you're spending, and is it worth it? I think it's a reasonable conversation to have. I know where I am, but again, my intent here, and I'm sorry that I'm taking so much time, but I think this is an important conversation for this board. Marty, you weren't part of these conversations leading up to all this, and I want you to hear all of it. Laura, you weren't part of it, but you were part of it from out in the audience with a completely different viewpoint that I think you have now. And so I want to have the full conversation. I didn't know we were going to do this, Steve. I didn't know you were going to be here. But it just seems to me that it's kind of all come together to have this full conversation.
Good. Absolutely. That's fine.
What have we not? Okay, so what have we not talked about that we need to talk about? What questions do you still have? Marty, what questions have come up for you as we talk this through?
I want to touch on this as being over here, and then you said county is something that you, as the board, the previous board, were looking to do. Wrote a letter to Paul in regards to the TIF funding. Mm-hmm. You never lived long enough to read it. And so just one of those things, you decide, well, knowing previous career takes you in about the north and south loops, this is an obvious extension. Ames is going this way, and the county has the ability to do this on a partnering basis, both with the university and city. I mean, it was just a draw. It was just a natural progression. I didn't have any real mind. I thought, how is this going to be bad? And I did it. And I walked away from it, like, well, wish them luck. What can we say? And never thought about it any other way. Things come to be for us. In this, an idea starts with somebody having a good idea, and then they turn around sharing it. And I know that you want to throw some sunshine on everything, but sometimes it's just like, hey, you can meet you for coffee, and it takes two guys just talking. And it moves into a different realm at some point. And I get that, but maybe that's all this was. Then I think, okay, it's Anders here, decided, hey, I got something I want to talk to him about. Maybe that's all that this was, and maybe there was something else. I don't know, but I think where you are, by what you see on the wall, what you see before you hear, I have comfort in both supporting it on a funny basis and the expectation that it will probably live up to its billing.
I'm genuinely hoping that I'm wrong about and I think it will live up to its billing. I would say about, you know, I don't really have skepticism in that way. I'm curious, and I will be very interested to follow if it in fact is an economic development tool. If the economic development part comes to be, and that will be whether it allows it to be easier for Steve to get new tenants into the research park.
Yes, Steve, anecdotally, what's your feel on that?
What I can tell you positively is we are showing the master plan to prospective tenants and to our current tenants, and they're extremely enthusiastic. So our current tenants are encouraging us to do what we can do to get this moving along because they see it as a very positive new asset. Now, the second thing that I've come to appreciate a great deal due to this park is how all the pieces are going to fit together. Okay, so in another 2 months, Provisions, the new restaurant, is going to open. And I had an opportunity a couple weekends ago to walk through that with the owner. And it's going to be a beautiful restaurant. And if you... When you go there and understand how it's been sited, it's been sited to take advantage of the bike trail that's going to come through there, and the idea that there will be a rest point there, and how that can interact with the restaurant. And you hopefully saw the announcement McFarland Clinic and a child care center are going to be located in that area. And the fitness center, I think, is still scheduled to open up in the fall. All of these things are going to bring people. And what I've come to appreciate is what we really wanted, which was to get people to think about the Research Park as a community within the region that provides employment, but is an asset to the entire region, is starting to come to fruition. But what's the impact of all these people coming and going? And I don't know. I think what we need to do is to build these frameworks, put them in place, and then be prepared to evolve from there. That's our game plan. And I'm very excited. Very excited.
And one of the places that we might be evolving, and I'll just say this, and it's nothing formal that I think the research part has done, but I think the original vision was, so when you look at what's basically south and southeast of the Ted Modesto Park right now, those are all going to be commercial lots for companies to build along that. And I think the original plan was that you would push those buildings as close to what was going to be the common area as possible. And now, as I understand it, Steve, as you look at this park, you guys are thinking about, do you want to go the other way and, without expanding the park, expand the feel of the park by pushing those buildings a little further away and having what would be a privately owned area by whatever company is coming in to those, but have it push away from the park rather than right on the park. I think that's true.
What it's creating are, again, opportunities for discussions. So our building is geothermal. We think it's going to have a very high LEED score. But now the McFarland Clinic building is going to be geothermal. The fitness center is geothermal. So a part of what we've pushed through this, and if you go back to our master plan, was sustainable practices. I think all of these things are additive to each other. And I'm not smart enough to figure out where it's all going to end up, but I do see a great, great opportunity going forward to continue to do some really special things.
Speaking of going forward, I know that when I came in and spent a couple hours with Mike was walking through what the plans were earlier on several months ago, and then Steve, you also. I heard already there was discussion about them coming, taking on more land in the future, and then more land in the future. I saw, Steve, you had an actual plan in your office that we talked about, and it showed kind of layers. All right. You're looking a little bit confused, so I'm assuming this is now off the table. So that
I don't think off the table or on the table. I think conceptually, when Steve has his conceptual plan, the reality is there are going to be open spaces as the park continues to expand. And I think yours is completely reasonable for Steve, conservation, and the county to consider what, if any, role the county is going to have in those future plans. But as far as it ever having been really talked about or discussed, that's where sometimes I feel like you put the cart ahead of the horse. You make an assumption that something has been decided or committed to or something when it has.
No, I don't put the cart before the horse. I'm concerned after having spent so 20 years in my previous profession about how often we're back to what Marty said about those people sitting and having coffee together, and then a few more people have a coffee or whatever, and all of a sudden it's become a project, even though it's now been fully decided and vetted by people, the people in the decision-making process. That's my fear.
Yeah, but
when I hear about what will happen, that already there's talk about 15 years down the road.
Sure, but you've got to have some idea of what direction you're headed and what conversation you're having. But for the previous board, I won't even use this, for the previous board, how does the previous board get committed to anything until two of them, at least two of them, hopefully three, but at least two of them are involved in the project? So you're getting ready to go down the road with housing, right? You're going to really, over the next year or so, you're going to really push Story County in the direction of housing. And I think that is completely appropriate. It's completely appropriate for you to go have any conversation, any meeting you want to have. The second Marty or I become involved, it now has changed that conversation in terms of the county. Because now you can make the case that the county can't commit to something. But as far as any one supervisor, in this case, Sanders, whatever that I had, any conversation that I might have with somebody about what kind of things we can try to develop, that's completely appropriate for the county. And this idea that it really worked you up, or felt like it really worked you up, that I had some of these conversations with Steve and Mike and some of those things, I think is exactly the way it's supposed to work. It's exactly the way I hope it works when you dig in and go look at housing. We're counting on you to dig into housing and transportation, and ultimately you're going to have worked with others to develop some kind of proposal that's going to come with more supervisors. That's where the rubber meets the road.
At this point, I do have a response, but it's going to take us down a road that I don't think is going to be productive. And so I'm going to thank everybody for the time we've had to talk here, but I mean, I just want to go back and we're going to go forward on this. I do plan on the housing to be bringing forward, bringing it forward, and all of a sudden not having asking you to make just one vote for this contract.
Well, but we haven't had this one. So using that to prepare this, Mike, how many votes have we had on this?
I'd say maybe more than that. I'd say definitely more than that, particularly if you include the conservation board in addition to the supervisors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You think this is not quite what it is.
Until that contract was signed, and Paul Toots was not happy that there had not been a discussion about the funding yet. Said a word. All of a sudden, there was a contract. And you guys all talked about that contract.
Where the funding comes in, you think when you come forward with a housing plan or a transportation plan that has big dollars attached to it, you think we're not going to have the conversation at that point in time about what the funding is and where it's coming from?
Absolutely. In fact, I expect to have, I plan on whatever I'm bringing you to have that be well in advance of my gut contract.
I don't think, so it would be really interesting to see if you can do that. Until you get a plan fleshed out, there is no way. I mean, we got a conceptual plan that's $4.7 million, and the reality is this is not going to end up being a $4.7 million project. It's going to end up being a $4.3 or $4.4 million project, and you just don't know until you get the plan done. And I hope that you are, and I expect, Laura's having worked with you now for a month, I really, really expect that you will keep this board informed of the kind of conversation you're having, much like I did with my previous board on the conversations that I was involved in, much like Mike did with the conservation board, which included Wayne Clinton at that point, on the conversations he was having. But that's different than a decision point. Decision points come when they come. Yeah, it's going to be really, really interesting when we get through some of the other conversations. We're going to have to see how much differently it goes than this one. And we can sure talk about anything we want to talk about today. But what I really wanted was to make sure that we got everything. I don't want there to be any misnomers about what happened in this process. And I think fairly I can say that you had some misnomers. You may not anymore, but you had attributed some things to this process that just weren't accurate at one point. And I want to make sure we don't have that anymore.
I agree with you that I don't want to have that anymore. I think sometimes back to Martin's analogy of one person picking up another person or having talking, it depends who's at the table. And I don't think all citizens have that access. And so whereas my misnomer about who reached out, I was wrong about who reached out, but the fact that there was a comfort of reaching out. I do want to just follow this up by saying on the vote today to approve this plan, my concern today is am I approving a $4.7 million contract? And then will I, even though we know that we probably are only on board for $4.1 million.
Well, we're $4 million.
$4 million.
Yeah, we're $4 million. We don't know exactly what silo that $4 million is coming out of. There's another $150,000 that's currently committed from DOT.
Correct. And I just encourage you again. This is a conceptual plan. You know that we've said that many times. And as such, it's hard to you have a conceptual level cost opinion. As we go down the design process, that cost opinion will become less conceptual. We'll be able to sharpen our pencils more on that, and at the same time be able to sharpen our pencils more on additional resources that we can bring to bear. And those being, we recognize the capacity of the county, that doesn't mean we're going to rest on our laurels as far as the conservation board goes and not try to accomplish as much as possible. And at the same token, i.e. leverage additional funding into this project. So if design says we have a $4.4 million project, then we're going to try to leverage that $4 million from the county into other funds and get that, meet that goal of $4.4 million. Does that make sense? And so thus far, we know that we've got the anticipation of $4 million from the county. We've got $150,000 generated from DOT. That is in the project. That makes the $4.415-ish, $150,000 from DOT. And then we've received some smaller funding, as well. So we'll continue to look for that outside funding. We'll continue to sharpen our pencil with the cost opinion as we go through design and to find that ground where mission, available resources, et cetera, all come to one point. And that's the goal.
So, I took this down this road, Marty and Lawrence, because I felt like it was important to have this conversation before we voted on adopting this conceptual review. I'm so appreciative, Steve, that you were here today, that we could have this conversation. I'll ask you guys one last time, is there any part of this that you don't feel like you had a clear understanding of exactly how we got here going through it? I mean, I really want to make sure that we're going to have some really interesting conversations here in the next 3 or 4 months as we start talking about the next piece of funding that the county's going to do and where it's going to come from. But I want you guys to have as much familiarity with how we got here as possible, and that's what today was intended to do. Good?
I have had support for this. I had the opportunity to vote to move it along to this point. Nothing's changed. I appreciate the background. I mean, if it weren't done here, it wasn't going to be done anywhere else in Story County. You had to have all the players at the table. Come in.
Okay. So can I have a motion?
I would move consideration of the master plan for the DESCO Environmental Center. Bring me second.
I know it's a bad.
Motion and second. Further discussion. Mike and Steve, anything to add?
Thank you.
Thank you. Really appreciate the conversation today. Absolutely.
Thank you for coming.
Aye.
Jay, got it. Olson.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. It is approved. Mike, good work. Thank you, Conservation Board, of course.
Thank you.
All right, so now we are to, oh my, I get to turn the page. We are to discussion and consideration about public notification process, notification tools, and possible policy for meetings where a quorum of the Board of Supervisors is present. Laura, you put this on our agenda.
Thank you. Put this on our agenda. With the new board, my interest in making certain that we not only meeting the law, but providing all we can to reach out to the citizens, make sure that they're at all, have opportunities to really attend all meetings, eventually move down the road and take a look at what we want our standard operating policies to be. So I asked for this. The background is we've had a couple of meetings that we hosted, and we learned about some procedures. We learned about some needs for employees to connect or departments to connect on a different basis. So Jessica's has been nice to come in and remind us about what our actual legal obligations are, and then I'll take it from there.
Perfect.
Good afternoon. Hi. The Board of Supervisors, Supervisor Olson, thank you for the invitation to come and give what I'm calling a brief overview of Chapter 21. Just stop me as I go through this overview if there's anything you'd like me to dive a little bit deeper into. Sure. Iowa Code Chapter 21 governs open meetings law, and it requires that when there's a meeting of a governmental body, there be public notice at least 24 hours in advance, unless there's a situation where we have good cause such that our notice would be impossible or impractical, and that we have a tentative agenda posted, and that minutes of the meeting are kept. So that sounds pretty easy, right? But what is a meeting? And we go to Iowa Code Section 21.2 sub 2 to decide. And so in this situation, we have two of the three members, a quorum of us present. And there would need to be deliberation or action upon any matter within the scope of the governmental body's policy-making duties. Meetings shall not include a gathering of members of a governmental body for purely ministerial or social purposes when there is no discussion of policy or no intent to avoid the purposes of this chapter. So, in essence, it's not a meeting when it's purely ministerial or social. Easy enough, right? But what does ministerial or social mean? Let's start with ministerial. So, a ministerial function are those functions, quote, performed by a governmental body which do not involve an exercise of discretion or judgment. And so this includes signatures, approval on documents, rudimentary things that you would do in the course of your employment. And then it also includes a category that I call receipt of information. This is when the board takes in information as a group. And we know from either administrative rulings or court rulings, some specific things that you're able to do as a board that are deemed ministerial. So this is what all three of you or two of the three of you are present. We know that you're able to attend our Access Volunteer Orientation. We know that you're able to gather to hear the results of a hired consultant where you look at a preliminary draft report and ask clarifying questions. We know that you're able to gather with me and receive legal advice. And we know that you're able to gather and discuss strategy for non-union employees. The reason, well, this is provided by a code section. Union employees are covered by the closed session portion of the open meeting. So we know that there are these times when legally you're able to get together as a quorum and perform ministerial functions as a board. How about social functions? Well, you're able to gather socially, to spend time together for friendly companionship. So if you're having a cup of coffee or you're at the water cooler and you're talking about your families, you're able to do that. You're able to go to a social event together. Just remember that that ministerial and social are specific functions, and the caution that I would give the board is that you want to make sure you never intentionally or unintentionally evolve into a meeting. And I know that none of you would intentionally do that. But unintentional evolution into a meeting is always a concern. And that could be a situation where it starts out as ministerial and then through natural discussion about non-policy subjects, it would evolve into that. So it's just something as a board member to keep in mind and govern yourself accordingly. So if it's not a social or ministerial function, then we know that when the three or the quorum of you are together, that it's going to be an open meeting under Iowa Code. And there are 12 reasons in Iowa Code Section 21.5 that allow you to go into closed session. You never have to go into closed session, but there are these 12 closed session exceptions. And really the crux of the closed session exceptions, and I'm happy to talk about any if you want to, but I'll try not to dive into it too deeply at this point, is to be able to protect the county entity from liability. So, for example, one of the, or detriment the county entity. So one of the exceptions is discussing personnel matters in public, and sometimes that can be problematic from an entity liability perspective. If we would say things in the public forum that would be either confidential and protected or would be defamatory in some way, that could suggest the county to potential liability. Also, real estate transactions are one of the closed session opportunities that the board has. And that, if we didn't go into closed session when we're trying to buy or sell real estate sometimes, and we're talking about what we want to offer, how much money we have, that could detriment us if we're trying to negotiate a price with someone. They could say, well, we know that you have up to $2 million for this, and that's just a hypothetical. So when you're offering 1.1, no. And so those are times when the board can consider going into closed session. And my office is always happy to be involved in those decisions and come to the board with requests for closed sessions. I do that from time to time when we have imminent litigation. Any questions about closed session? I wanted to touch on electronic meetings. Iowa code allows for electronic meetings, and that's section 21.8 of the code. And this is allowed when it's impossible or impractical for a quorum of people to be together in person. So an example would be that someone's, you know, a board member's traveling and maybe someone else's car breaks down and we can't all get together, but we have 24 hours notice and we can all appear via phone. And we can notify the public of that. And what we've done in the past for electronic meetings is we've had them same place, same time available for the public to hear on speakerphone. So those are things that are available when we have circumstances that occur that make it so that we can't all be together in person. An evolving area of open meetings law that I keep a close eye on and I think we'll see to continue as technology continues is communication with technology. So it's possible for any governmental body to violate open meetings laws when they're using technology. And one way is group emails, which I hate group emails. And you'll get this all the time where people email you and include all three of you, and then you'll see people replying all. And you guys do a great job of this, if someone replies, not all of you replying and not you guys communicating together. But just remember that. I think one thought would be you could reply directly to the person, not reply all. Or if you see that one of your board members has replied all, then just kind of watch that and not reply all. You know, when I send communications to the three of you, I try, but I'm not always successful at putting don't reply all, although that's a little different for the privileged communication. But that's just something to be thinking of when you're getting emails together. Texting, same thing. You could violate open meetings by doing that. If you do decide to do that, then just remember to not let it evolve into those areas that we talked about. And there are different ways that this is going to play out. For example, social media and all the things that are coming down the pike that we can't even envision. So anytime you're communicating with each other, just be sure that you're keeping it in that ministerial or social capacity. And
I'm bad at this. This is one I struggled with, and I hit that reply off because that has been used to. Fortunately, I don't think there's been any problems.
No. I think you've all done an excellent job of handling this. It's something to just keep in mind because you're busy. You're working hard in a bunch of different things. You all have a lot of duties and obligations. And so keeping those things in mind are important to me. You know, I wish you didn't have any email or any texting or any social media as your attorney, but that's impractical and that's not the way that our world functions today. The other thing I would just say is that you're also always potentially creating an open record. And so my suggestion is that you only use your county email for county purposes and that any private accounts can be used for county work or county matters. So thanks for giving me a chance to get on.
Thank you.
Sure. Switch up.
So since this board has been together, while we're waiting on you to get your flash drive, so since this board has been together, we've got a couple really good examples. So what I hear is when more than two of us are together, two or more of us are together, it has to be either a meeting, an open meeting, a closed meeting, or a non-meeting. Otherwise, we're in violation of something. And we actually have demonstrated all three. Well, I don't remember if we've had a closed meeting, but we've had clearly open meetings where we're all together. Mm-hmm. We've had meetings. We've had what I believe are non-meetings that we posted notice to. We've had non-meetings like where we received information that we didn't post notice for. And we actually changed one. So one that the county has done traditionally for years is we've had a meeting with our insurance provider to provide us with information about our insurance. No policy, no deliberation, no real discussion. And this year, Laura, primarily because you were concerned about it, we changed the way we handled that. And I attended that meeting with County Attorney Reynolds, Alyssa Wignall, Deb Shildroth, and our insurance provider. I think that was it. Where we received the detailed information, but it's just information. Marty and Laura's didn't share that information, and we'll have a appropriate for the public presentation that will come to you guys next week, or is it 2 weeks? On the 28th. So, I mean, we've got, just in our short time together, I think we've got examples of all of this.
Okay. It does this to me sometimes. Yeah, I will.
Sorry. It's not a Mac, so Laura's in trouble.
Laura's is struggling right now. Fortunately, Jessica's come to my rescue.
Oh, we'll see. Yeah, no, don't speak too soon.
You're saying application not found.
Yeah. Sometimes.
No, it's just on a, it's on a regular flash drive.
You've got USB 30 SD on the left hand side, correct?
Right here?
Okay.
There we go. Now it's falling.
This one?
Okay.
Got it?
Yep, that's
yep.
It. Yep. Yeah. Okay.
That way,
there we go. Chapter 21. Okay, I'm good. Thank you.
Sure. Oh. Yeah, well, should we repair it?
I
think I got you.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
Do you want me to get in?
Yes. Okay, so anyway, all right. So I'm taking off, and where my concern has been is about ministerial, as you guys know. All right. So I pulled out here some information from the Iowa Public Information Board, and obviously the definition is the same as you know, from what Jessica said. It's ministerial is... when there's no discussion of a related to the deliberation of the meeting or discussion. Okay, and here from this Iowa Public Information Board, it appears that gathering for purely ministerial purposes may include a situation in which members of a governmental body gather simply to receive information on a matter within the scope of the body's policymaking duties. Well, going forward, as we discuss what kind of policy we may or may not want to implement here, is that just we're receiving information that's the public's business, and we're usually receiving information that the public has paid for. And that was my argument there with the insurance. Why one reason why I felt uncomfortable if we didn't go ahead and post on the insurance on that. But that has to do with best practices, not the law itself.
So, Laura, do you mind if I did?
Right.
So I think I agree with that to the point, but it's not the public's business, nor is it appropriate for the public to know who slipped and fell or who got, you know, bit by a road or who, you know.
I agree.
So, yeah, so it changes what information the board is able to receive collectively. And here's my concern,
okay,
is, well, it's always better for us as one body, because we're one body. It's three individuals, but it's one board of supervisors. It's always better when we receive the same information at the same time, because there's less confusion about what is out there.
Okay, and I agree. And, of course, the issue, as we ran into the Tedesco meeting, is that there was not an exemption under Chapter 21 for us just to do the closed session for that specific page in that report. And that's where we kind of moved forward. So that was the dilemma there. And then going back to even had we met in what would have started you're saying it's a ministerial function. If you look at the italicized part here at the end, a meeting may develop if a majority of the members of a body engage in any discussion that focuses at all concretely on matters over which we may exercise judgment or discretion. And that's the thing that is key, especially with Marty being on the board less than a year, and I'm new on the board, and yes, I am able to exercise some self-control, but at the same time, I want to ask questions. I mean, if I'm meeting with someone about the public's business, I want to be able to ask that question. And it sounds like that if I'm asking that question, a response is given. It may be clarified to start, but if there's any feedback from one of the other two of you, all of a sudden, we've crossed over.
There's all kinds of opportunities to cross over,
yeah.
But that's the reason that in every one of those insurance meetings since I've been around, we've had either the assistant county attorney or the county attorney there. The other thing I'll say, and you remember this really, really well, so when I was appointed to the board back in 2010, I had a major concern with what was then the Monday morning meetings of the Board of Supervisors.
Right.
So at that point, Board of Supervisors would get together, and I want to say it was 8:30 on a Monday morning, and they would bring in, Deb, you guys didn't come in every week, did you? Kind of rotated where every other week, the department head would come in and give a full report to the board, which in and of itself would be fine, but there was a lot of discussion. I said it happened. I used to laugh at it. I used to say, you know, it literally happened in a back room. It happened in the conference room, and I watched one time, and I remember vividly, it was the former IT director who came in and gave a phenomenal PowerPoint presentation, and it was on, it might have been on fiber optic. I mean, it was on some kind of technology that was coming to the county. And she probably gave a 21-page report on what was going on. And all three supervisors were there. I was sitting in the corner of the room as a candidate, which you've experienced before, right? And watching this thing, and the supervisors, it was a great discussion. They had a great discussion. Well, why would we do this and why wouldn't we do that? And I'm breaking out into a sweat because I just can't stand that this happened. So the very next Tuesday, they come out here and they have exactly the same presentation from this IT director. Exactly the same. There's no questions. Mm-hmm. There's no conversation. They pass it 3-0. Of course, I think you were in the audience that Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was appointed, I didn't feel it was appropriate for me as an appointed supervisor to come in and say, oh, that's it. We're not doing any more Monday morning meetings. But I said very clearly, all right, I'll sit in on Monday morning meetings, but if I ever feel like we're crossing the line to being in a open meeting, I'm out the door, and that's what I did until such time as I was elected, and then we didn't have Monday morning meetings anymore.
And the Monday morning meetings were interesting because when I first came on and was with the register, I immediately went down to the register, my bosses in the newsroom, and had a discussion about those, and we talked to our legal counsel even, and the only problem with them was that they were actually being posted on the bulletin board out here. The problem was they weren't following the
minutes. No recording.
Right, no minutes, no recording, and they weren't being posted as far as who was going to talk about what topic, and you know, so legally there was an issue with them too, but thank you for making my point, Rick, because every meeting that occurs outside of a notice situation, a true notice situation, is a situation where a conversation isn't able to be heard, and certainly everything we do here on Tuesday morning, I mean, everybody over time time, the public knows. But we're going to have other meetings where we can at least notice them correctly, and then the public may be able to show up, right?
But you and I had lunch together at snack time.
Mm-hmm.
We run into each other from time to time at Cafe Diem.
Right.
It's possible for this to happen anywhere, and it is relying upon the board
right. To
make sure that we never cross that line to open to discussion or deliberation. And if we do, it has to stop right there.
I agree. And we had a lovely discussion at snack time about liver and onions. And we're both fans.
But that could have turned into, that could have very easily turned into.
And you're right. So we have to exhibit that control. When we know we're meeting with someone, as I said, I eventually want to head toward when we're discussing, when we know that we're meeting someone that is related to the county's business, and we're paying, especially if we're paying for it with the county money. And that was where the Tedesco thing came in, okay? So anyway, I just pulled out from Dooley versus Johnson County, which County Attorney Reynolds already had talked about, was that, you know, this is what the actual court said. Gathering for this purpose appears dangerously close to deliberation. And in this situation, reminder, there was not a quorum there. Okay? But there was an attempt to get information from a contractor, and they hadn't noticed it. And so I just wanted to remind that even the court is saying, look, even though we found that this was not in violation, it certainly was a poor decision. Yes. Marty?
Nothing. We're just placing another meeting here coming up, so I'm just calling. Nothing. I'm just
okay,
keeping waving people in the hallway.
Yeah, all right. So there are the references I just used for what was up above. The rule of thumb for Chapter 21. Okay, here's where I'd like to go on our proposed goals. Commit to public involvement and transparency. I'd like to create processes targeted toward the public rather than internal timetables when practical. I'd like to develop standards for uniform agenda postings and content requirements. I'd like to adopt best practices even if they exceed minimum legal requirements. And to do that, moving ahead very quickly, is one of the proposals I'd like to put before the board that we can discuss and maybe go forward with, is create a committee to actually look at what best practices might be. Someone from the county attorney's office, someone from the auditor's office, we can appoint a staff member from the board. I obviously would like to sit on it, but it, maybe what we need is instead one of our employees to sit on it and then come back and, you know, I can filter from there. Enact policy incorporating all of the above, and then to integrate the policy into all the outreach and communication components. And so I'd like to show you just something Leanne and I did in an hour. Leanne did, and I sat and kind of asked her, you know, please do this. Right now, I think people can go on to our homepage. They see right away up there agendas and minutes. They know how to go ahead and click. Prior to what Leanne did for me last week is we had county budgeting administration, but we didn't really post the work sessions. All the time, something like the economic development work session. We just posted the budget work sessions. In addition, we had what was the quadrant meetings all the way down at the bottom of the page. And most people then, when they sign up to follow the board, I don't think they realize they were only signing up for the Tuesday meetings that is staffed by Shelley as our clerk, okay? And they didn't realize they weren't getting everything else. So then what we did, as now with the changes that Leanne made, when you click through, you go to this page and you see everything in its chronological order. And so that's just one example of how we can go ahead and do that. And it doesn't cause it to cost any more or time. So I'd just like to get us all on board to be committed to, besides Chapter 21, taking a look at when we are discussing public business, and also that we continue to move forward to make sure the public...
So I think this. I think any time that we discuss or deliver by law, it is an open meeting. I would suggest that, at least from my perspective, commit to public involvement and transparency. I think Story County from before me has been committed to public involvement and transparency. I don't think they always got it exactly right. I remember the website, when Paul and I came on board, the website was really, really bad. I mean, it's not great now, but it was really, really bad, and there was no such thing as, Shelly, you didn't post the audio, right? Somebody could come and get a CD from you if they wanted an audio, but the audio wasn't readily available. We sure weren't recording anything, and so I think I can very clearly make the case that we already have a commitment. Now, does that mean that we don't want to continue to do better and better and better? Absolutely. But, Lawrence, where you're going to lose me is if you consider everything a formal meeting, everything a public meeting, because I will still stand by. I think you and Marty, unfortunately, missed out by not getting that presentation from Matt Tedesco. I have more information than either of you do now. And even if you receive it at some point, even if Alyssa or Deb shares with you the specific information, you will not have received it in the same form that I received it. And I know for me as a supervisor, I would really dislike not having access to the information that I felt like I needed to be able to do my job.
I'd like to go back to how this all happened with Matt Tedesco, because one of the things that was very clear to me was we don't have an actual uniform, smooth way to handle a meeting like that. I came back from being sick for 4 days, or I'd have noticed it earlier, and we'd have had time to react and at least get it posted.
But that needed to be posted, and that's the conversation.
See, but I think
having.
It did.
Well, but here's why I don't think it does, and she's leaned over talking right now, but I think the first question is always from a board of supervisors, here is this item. Is it a meeting? And if it's a meeting, then absolutely it needs to be posted, and we need to do a better job. No question about it. I appreciate the work you and Leanne put in. We need to do a better job making sure that Austin knows about every work session, right? There was a work session, Austin, that it wasn't that we didn't post it. It was that we didn't post it in a way that it was readily available to you, and I think we need to do a better job of that, and I'm all in. But where I push back is if the question to the county attorney is it appropriate for the board together to receive this information? And the county attorney says, yes, it's appropriate. And not only is it appropriate, I'll be there. Where nothing's going to cross the line. And it's beneficial to the board collectively to receive that information together. I think to do our jobs well, we've got to continue to have that ability.
To do our jobs well, we have to be able to not only receive the information, we have to be able to ask questions about it. And those questions are the minute that we go from a strict clarifying to some kind of conversation, we've crossed the line. And one way is, yes, to have the attorney there so we don't get in legal trouble, but it stops us from being able to have a conversation that, with the exception of that one page out of how many pages were in that report, 15, 20 pages, we weren't able to have that conversation because of the inclusion of one piece of paper that was, quite frankly, I'm so sad that for some reason we couldn't have fit that into an exemption. For Chapter 21. I know, I understand that. I think it's sad, and that the reason we couldn't discuss that piece of paper, even though there were no names there, but is because we couldn't bring in from another chapter the exemption that says
that. Yeah, but we can't do what we can't do.
Right, I understand.
We can't do
what's not allowed. Why wouldn't we want to have the rest of that conversation where all three of us could really have a conversation with our insurance agent? And why wouldn't the rest of that conversation have maybe been enlightening to the public?
Well, so having the meeting that would have included all three of us, and let's just, this is a great example, so I want to
continue. It's a good example. It's a great example.
Having that conversation, if it had been the three of us probably sitting back here at our conference,
right.
So as it was me and Jessica and Alyssa and Deb meeting with members of Matt Tedesco, mm-hmm. and going through this and having a real, receiving a really in-depth analysis of what's going on, what the trends are, how we're doing, and it's all really, really valuable. And now you and Marty are going to get a small piece of that since you weren't in. You aren't going to get the full effect. And here's what bothers me about that. You are so inquisitive. This is a good one, by the way. For what bothers me is you're so inquisitive that I don't have any doubt in my mind that if you had sat through that full meeting at the time we were having, there would have been questions that would have come up in your mind. Not necessarily questions that would have been appropriate for you to ask at that point, but right now you don't even know that you have those questions.
Yeah, that's correct, and all we had to do was pull that one piece of paper out of the report.
No, because it was more of a conversation than that. More than just that piece of paper, we're receiving information that is not suitable for the public. So what you're going to get, how long did we meet over there? Rough guess. Was it an hour and a half? It's an hour and a half. It's going to be a 15-minute presentation that we're going to get from that. You guys are not going to have the same information that
How was there information that wasn't suitable for the public?
I can't talk about that right now. We're in public.
So then it must have been information that could have been covered, that would have been exempted by Chapter 21 then? Well, yeah, we're going to have ongoing, I guess, problems with this, because how do we get information not suitable for the public that, but yet this is somebody we employ and provides us a service? So we pay for that service, and certainly every dollar we spend is in fact the public's interest. And how we spend that dollar and how we make that decision about what vendors we choose is of the public's interest, and what service that vendor provides to us is of the public's interest. So I really am...
You're going to get all that. You're going to get all of that. You're not going to get the detail of what's really going on. And the answer that I have to this is, let's trust our county attorney to give us good advice. Let's trust our county attorney to be part of any of those times that we get together to receive information. I'm not saying after the fact that we go to the county attorney and we say, oh, by the way, we had this meeting, now figure out how...
How did we know in advance, though, that this was going to be whatever this quasi-information is that we can't share in public?
Because that's what we have every year.
We do the same thing
every year? I guess I might have left the meeting anyway. I guess if there was something shared that I thought should have been shared with the public, that wasn't.
Nothing unlawful in those meetings, and Jessica sits through all of them, but see, what's different is, had we done it the way Story County traditionally did it, completely appropriately, completely legally done it, you would have all that information right now. And if there was something in that meeting that you felt like was necessary to be shared with the public, you know what? You'd have that ability now.
But you don't feel that you have an obligation to share it with the public.
Yeah, I don't think 100% of the things we know get shared with the public. An example I'll give you is Leanne Harder really led a phenomenal process putting together the Coop Call. How you've read the Coop Call, you've seen both now the redacted version and the non-redacted version.
Mm-hmm.
What percentage of that book, Loris, is redacted?
Well, a great 85, sure.
85 or 90%?
Sure, right.
That's not public. How much more information do you have once you saw the non-redacted version versus the redacted version?
Right.
That's part of the deal.
And you're saying the insurance, this discussion about insurance, included that type of information related to government operations that could put the government at risk of a true safety risk of not being able to function?
I'm not comparing that in terms of a safety risk to the government. I'm comparing that to a privacy risk for our employees and knowing what kind of trends are out there and what we're seeing happening in regards to insurance and what the trend lines are in other places that you can't have the public conversation about, and how Story County is doing, and strategically where Story County may want to consider having a full conversation about where we go in the future. You've been part of all this. Am I missing on any of this? I know I start making queasy when I start to have some of these conversations. Am I missing on any of this?
Why would strategy not be open to the public?
That's what I'm saying. We don't develop internal. So I go into those meetings. Every year we've had those meetings.
No conversation. But, of course, you know me well enough to know. I go into every one of those meetings and I start thinking about, okay, where does the county need to go from here? And just because it's not talked about that out there, now all of a sudden, when we talk about it out here, everybody's dealing with the same information. I mean, we just spent 45 minutes today going through something on the research part, just in an effort from me to make sure you and Marty have as much of the same information as I have. Because that's the only way we're going to operate as a really efficient board. Is if we're going to have differences of opinion. I mean, if you and I have proven and will continue to prove, we're going to have differences of opinion. But we should start with the same exact information.
But I agree with you, and I'm coming back to this, that if we get information that we may use in the future, and I just heard you say that the information that you got was information we may use in the future because it's related to employee trends, it's related to strategy, et cetera. So I'm back to, I would have in that meeting said, wait a minute here, are we discussing something?
Well, that's different. That's
deliberation and action are the distinction. I think this is helpful. You can receive information, which is what you're doing.
Yeah, sure. And I have a 2 o'clock, so I'm going to be
busy. Oh, sure.
But I think the distinction is discussion, deliberation, or action, and that is absolutely not allowed. And my presence in those meetings is for that purpose, to ensure that that's not allowed. You can receive as a group any information.
Even information that we may, in the future, discuss, deliberate, or decide on. Exactly.
But it is that threat that you and I have discussed about, if you're not careful when you receive the information, you just start kind of talking to each other, well, hey, isn't that, then you can cross over from a ministerial gathering to an open meeting.
Okay, and I want to go back and re-look at Dooley, because didn't Dooley talk about information in itself that's going to be used in the future?
You can receive information, you can't discuss, deliberate, or take action.
Okay, but Dooley didn't talk about reference.
It doesn't prohibit that, and that is my legal opinion based on my experience, which I have a great deal of material.
Okay, and so for me, Loris, what it comes down to is, so I tend to drive a little faster than I should sometimes. And that Suburban that I drive will move at a pretty good pace if I'm not careful. Now, the speed limit between here and Des Moines on the interstate is 70 miles an hour, right? And I try really hard to go 70 miles an hour. And there is real danger, knowing how I tend to do things and knowing how fast that vehicle will go, that I may speed up and go faster than 70 miles an hour. If I do that, I'm at fault. But the fact that I should only be able to go 70 miles an hour doesn't mean I ought to drive at 45 just to be safe that I'm not going to go over 70. And if I choose to go over 70, or if I accidentally go over 70, I'm at fault. And that's the way I view about a non-meeting, that insurance meeting. If we had been Florida, if our county attorney, if we'd been together, and we had taken it from being an appropriate meeting to being an inappropriate meeting, that's on us. And if our county attorney had been there and not recognized that it was moving to inappropriate, that's on us. And for us to hamstring our ability to operate when what we're doing is completely legal, completely legitimate, in trying to make sure that everybody receives the same information at the same time. We don't do anything with it at that point, but we receive the same information. I think we can never be as effective a board as possible to be, knowing that we got the differences of opinion that we got up here, all three. We gotta start with common ground, and common ground is getting information.
Yes, and I don't think we can ever be effective as long as we can't have those conversations when we've got the vendor in the room.
Well,
so I mean,
you can always bring the vendor back. Well, I mean, we're doing it this time. You're going to be able to ask either of you anything you want to ask him, but you're starting from a point of not having the same information. Because even if you go to Deb, Alyssa, Jessica, you can't come to me. You go to one of those. They're going to give you every piece of information that they remember, but you did not receive it at that time, in that context, with the depth that I received.
Mm-hmm.
It's different.
Well, okay. So moving forward here on, because, I mean, you and I are not going to agree about this. I mean, I really feel we are obligated. It's not just what's legal or not. All right. It's what you know, it's what we're obligated to do, what we were elected to do, which is conduct the people's business in the light of day. And so there's going to be a disagreement between you and I. I'm hoping there are not a whole lot of these meetings where I'm not going to be attending them if I really feel uncomfortable about this.
Yeah, so
I appreciate that distinction. I think it's really important for me before I leave to my soapbox that that legal versus policy distinction is made, because you know my role is what's legal, and that's quite frankly not hard for me to determine. I've got a lot of guidance, and then I think the board's challenge, from what I'm hearing sitting here, mm-hmm. is. Policy-wise, you decide to go above and beyond the legal requirements. And so that will be an ongoing conversation, it sounds like, and it's a good conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this board can decide that we're just not going to collectively receive the same level of information that traditionally we have received. So I think you're right. We were elected by the people of Story County to represent them doing the county's business. But that doesn't mean that all 97,000 of them get to have exactly the same information in all cases. It means they need to be able to see exactly how we discuss, deliberate, and make decisions. But it doesn't mean that they get to have the same information we have exactly when we get to have it. That's why they elected us. That's why we're not a true and complete democracy, right, where everybody gets to weigh in on every single issue. That's not the way it works. They elect the three of us, and the second they want to elect a different one of us, they elect a different one of us.
I don't obviously hold that same view, okay? I find that, but that's, at this point, they're waiting for the room, and everybody is apparently, Marty, you haven't weighed in at all. I still have asked what the next steps would be. What do you think the next steps should be?
Well, I would tell you I'm pleased beyond words to say that you have taken on the clunky website we got, that we put ourselves out there. I'm kind of surprised when you first sign in and you start looking at the tools that the county provides. That was terrible. It still is. It's getting better, but it needs to be done. We individually bring collective experiences that to the table. You often speak as a journalist. Well, I said there is a 10-year board president on the school board, and we do reviews with our insurance providers, and these things are offered up to us, you know, individually, collectively. And you're brought up there in a position of leadership as you get the whys and the what-fors, because often some of the information they provide tell you why you got to what you pay. And I guess without going too deep into that piece of paper, that tells you why you have the rates you got. And there's just some information that, you know, we're looking at, you have things are in motion, some things are settled, some things are pending, some things are litigated. And there's just, I'm not comfortable putting myself in a position to say this is going to be a public document, because frankly it's not. And that's my experience, and I would only hope that you validate it and take it for, as I defer to you as a journalist, defer to me as an elected official doing just this. That's the experience I bring to the table. Those are the eyes that I give to this issue.
So the question I've asked, or I've proposed, that we develop a committee from people with these different departments to take a look at what would be best practices.
And my stance is, so I guess the first thing I would say is, I don't think you and I are that far off. When it comes to us in our legislative role, I'm with you 100%. I'm just afraid you're not looking at us in our executive role. And the Board of Supervisors have two, I mean, it's an interesting dichotomy that they ask us to do in the legislative role and the executive role. And in our executive role, we have some gatherings that are not meetings. By law, they're just not meetings. And so my contention is, Story County is already going above and beyond the law. We already do more. And I feel very strongly in this one case, talking about insurance, that we made a mistake collectively as a board in you and Marty not being included in that information, and there's no way that I can get to that you guys can be included unless we do it exactly the way we've been doing it. And I hear you very clearly, Lawrence, that you're not willing to do that. And so I don't have a great answer for that,
But I would say this. Here's my thought of best practices. We continue to be absolutely committed to adhering to the open meetings, open records law, and we go beyond it. We put videotape out. We make sure that you help get our website cleaned up and user-friendly. You and I have talked about it a couple of times. It's not enough just to be have the information passively available. We got to make it readily available to the public, and I'm all in on that. And then my suggestion would be anytime we have a question, anytime we have something pop up that we might need to meet on, that we're uncertain about where to go, we refer to the county attorney's office and say, county attorney's office, give us advice on how we head to this. And if, in fact, we decide it's not a meeting, but the three of us are going to be together receiving information, we make sure we have somebody from the county attorney's office there, part of the meeting to it completed to ensure that we don't get anywhere close to crossing a line we don't want to cross.
We met with the Farm Bureau on Thursday night. There were three of us there. The Farm Bureau, we presented information about what was going on in the county. We discussed what was going to come up in the future, and the Farm Bureau lobbied us on basically papers. Okay, so did we have a meeting or did we not?
Well, I will say that these issues are very fact specific. So I want to look at that in its entirety. Was it recorded or anything like that?
Well, no, because they don't think that
it was posted.
It was posted. We posted it. I was pretty adamant about that, okay. That we posted.
So I think it sounds like you all you present together.
Well, one after the other. We took our turn.
I never spoke on CAPOS until the meeting broke out.
Well, we didn't present on CAFOs. We presented on here what's happening on the county. What do we see? What our goal? You know, what are we going to do in the future? I talked about for me. I talked about a little bit about what I'd like to look at with housing and roads, and Rick talked about what might be coming down the path, county budget, and I mean.
So you provide a person to this for you, and you deliberate.
No, but to me that was a discussion.
Well, I think we were giving the opportunity for the...
together, so we all, this is what I think on people, so I think on people, this is where I'm going.
No.
So I think there's a law solution, and again, the way I do this conversation is that you've got the legal requirements, which is what I know, and then I think there's a desire to maybe exceed the legal requirements on your part, like you're talking about best practices and policy decisions. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, when you and I talk about these things, I think that's where the difference is. Legally, it sounds to me like it wasn't mandated to be an open meeting from what I'm hearing. Discussion, deliberation, action, that's where my mind is legally. But does that mean that you can't post it? Absolutely not.
Right.
You can decide to
post it. I think that one, so for me, Loris, I think that one was completely appropriate that we posted it. But that's not what the tradition of Story County has been. It has been one supervisor, generally the chair, attending that Farm Bureau meeting. And I think you and Marty rightly pointed out, hey, we're new to the board. We want to go to this meeting. And you said, let's post it. And I thought that was completely appropriate.
Doesn't it sound like, I mean, we're taking
right.
limited facts. Doesn't it sound to me like discussion, deliberation, and action between the three of you happened, and therefore the law wouldn't require that. But that doesn't mean that you can't do that, which it sounds like is what you did anyway.
So how, if we don't have a policy, okay, coming back to differences about what it means, if we don't have some kind of policy about how, about what circumstances we are going to post on. And from that then, because then part of what I ran into is the auditor's office said they wouldn't post something like that, so we had to go to Leanne instead. So we've got a gap in our process, too. And, excuse me. So from that standpoint, we've got, if we don't have a policy, if we don't have a policy, then how are we going to develop a process? And how are we going to know as we go forward? Are we going to have, I mean,
We've got a process. We post, absolutely. Yes, sir, you've been very helpful. You've been really helpful.
All right, then.
Okay. We've got an existing process, Loris. It is we post all meetings, and we don't post non-meetings. And if there's a question about whether it's a meeting or a non-meeting, we go to the county attorney's office to get a determination. That's our process.
Yeah, and I just feel that, I mean, we're back to the activities that will occur in a non-meeting. All right, this is back to this insurance one. Yeah, would it have been nice that we all three were there? Certainly it would have been to get information, but I don't feel like going to a meeting. I don't need to be,
no,
I feel like I don't want to, but.
You've proven that you're going to go above and beyond, up to and including, I don't know if we said this publicly yet, up to and including getting in a motor grader to observe plow and snow at 2 in the morning. You've proven more authority in your month if you're willing to go above and beyond. So that's not the question. The question is, how are you going to reconcile the reality that you're both a member of a legislative body and an executive body, and there are very clear differences in those two roles?
Well, that you're right. How am I going to reconcile it? I think that both of them, being in the government, are requiring of still the open. I don't think there's that much of a difference. There are some things we know that we need to keep personnel. Okay, we know that we need to keep private.
Well, so it sounds to me like, though, you're saying there's only two possibilities. There's either an open meeting or a closed meeting. And I'm saying there's a third possibility. There's a non-meeting. A non-meeting that has the three of us present. Jessica has very clearly laid out that legally, there clearly is that.
Legally,
you're
legally
suggesting that we should operate where it's either an open meeting or a closed meeting. And the problem with that is, there is absolutely no way to take an open meeting to a closed meeting unless it is one of those things that's allowable to close a meeting. So the second you start to have it, it changes the information you can receive appropriately.
Right, and then we're back to, for me, I can't conceive of almost any information that would not be appropriate for us to receive in front of other people. I know you say there is, but...
No, I'm fine with, so sitting here as the chair right now, I'm fine if you want me as the chair to be the one receiving that additional information. That's fine. Where I'm not going to be fine is one day when I'm not chair, and somebody else is giving the information that I feel like I need to have in the same context that they got it. And that's where it's going to get interesting down the road.
But I'm not saying I don't need the information also. I'm just back to saying that the information involved with the public business is actually open information. And otherwise, what you're being given, if it's not state secret, then it's the type of stuff I do think that down the road we will use to have discussions on. So I understand where you are sitting. I've asked if anybody would support me in a policy and going forward, and I hear no. This is what I just got out of you guys, is that, nope, we're doing more than we need to do now. And that's what I've heard from you.
I think we should consider to continue to monitor this. And so we had exactly two. In our month, we've had two, right? We have one that was never intended to have more than one of us attend, that three of us attended, and we posted that. And that's the Farm Bureau. And we have one that was intended for the three of us to attend, that we weren't going to post, and so we ended up with just one of us at 10. And I would say we continue to follow this pathway and see if this is really an issue. First of all, you get to where you've got it reconciled in your head. Here's the reality, and I mean this, I think you agree with this. You learn more about sitting on this side of the table every single day, right? I mean, you just do. And reconciling that with the reality of how you spend a majority of your adult life sitting on the other side reporting on what's going on this side is a little different.
But it doesn't change my basic beliefs or my ethics. I got into my profession because of what I believed about government and how, whether it be legislative or executive, it should be run, not the other way around. So
absolutely, but you have to have seen in your years that there are things that occur in government that not only appropriately, but necessarily, Austin doesn't get to know about. right? And the people that Austin writes for doesn't get to know about it. And the people that you wrote for with the Des Moines Register and Ames News Online didn't get to know. And I go back to the coup cog for that, Morris. You've seen both versions of that.
The coup cog is clearly, it also is that type that we talked about earlier, proprietary information. I mean, it's information proprietary to us to be able to operate in an emergency, right? That's a good talk. And so you're telling me that you heard things sitting in that meeting that truly affect our ability to operate as a county.
I think that I would agree to that we're proprietary. I would agree to that, because some of the things that are not noticed in the coup cog have nothing to do with the county's ability to operate. They have to do with privacy of our employees, things like cell phone lists. Think about some of the things that are in there, and I'm saying it's a lot more comparable to stuff like that than it is, oh, how is the county going to operate when you get with an FBI formation? That's what I say. I think it's a great conversation. I think this is one of those areas that is going to make it entertaining for Austin here over the next year.
I'm not here to entertain Austin, though, or anybody.
No, but, and I'm sorry you're frustrated, because this is part of the deal that we're going to have conversations
about. Right, but please, this do not generate it straight down to that level. I understand.
There's nothing denigrating about that, Doris. The reality is, you and I have a different viewpoint, and for you covered this board for a long, long time, it's much more interesting to cover a board that has some different viewpoints than a board that tends to agree on everything. So don't take it as denigration, and don't let your frustration that we didn't agree with you turn into something more than it is. I hope you're seeing how much I appreciate what you put in. I'm just allowed to appreciate it and still disagree with you.
Of course you are. Thank you.
Okay. All right, so we are now to departmental reports, none. Other reports, none. Public forum number two, opportunities for members of the public to address topics not on today's agenda. We won't take any action due to the open meetings law, which is nice fortuitous.
Yeah,
come on.
You don't want any more time, so send you an email. Just don't reply at all.
Thanks, Linda. And liaison assignments,
Marty. Good. Drainage District here. We'd like to go to. We got the employees' appreciation, and I guess I kind of escaped me. I'm deep into mentally going through what we've been through. So don't have everything, but that's all I got for
you. Okay, Morris.
Mary Crafty from Boost. Boost is undergoing a 4.25% reduction immediately, and they anticipate that next year's budget will include that same 4.25%. I think in the moving forward, yeah, we've got employee recognition. We have the Story County Assessor, and let's see. So that's it for later.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. For me, Conservation Board last night, really, really good meeting. Actually, Linda was there for, you stayed for all of it, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Linda was there for all of it. And I guess the big takeaway that I would have is no cabins in next year's budget. So I've talked to Lisa Markley about what kind of budget we're going to publish, but no cabins in next year's budget was a big takeaway from last night. Announcements, Marty. Boris.
I was contacted. I've been contacted by several different constituents this week. Of course, they're very upset about what's going on down in Des Moines with the collective bargaining. I also was contacted as a result of that. The Ames Chamber and Ames Economic Development Commission had weighed in as lobbying for that bill. And some people were concerned that we had a contract with such an agency, but they have now changed that to uncommitted, I guess. So based on some feedback that they received from a lot of people. I had a meeting on Monday with a woman here in Nevada whose church group has started something called Common Ground, and they are going out and voluntarily meeting all kinds of needs in the Nevada community, including providing transportation to residents to get to medical appointments and getting to, into Ames for various things. And so I've asked her to send me, well, she's already talked to United Way and it applied for some money, didn't get it, but I've asked for that information to be sent to see if that's something to, you know, talk to them for further about. So that's pretty much.
That's worthy of support. I'm not saying that
you reach out.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how you develop some of those possible things. I don't have any. So I take a motion to adjourn.
Salute.
I second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. We're adjourned.